Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Melissa. This is episode 5 of Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Pretty great. Pretty great. It's a Friday. Busy week.
TGIF. Friday after Halloween.
What's that?
Friday after Halloween.
Yeah.
It was a crazy night with the kids. And
was it?
Yeah. I mean, they really, they're on a mission.
Okay.
They're on a mission to get as much candy as they can possibly get that they won't eat, that will just sit in my pantry calling my name.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you do your speed walking?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
We had to hit as many houses as possible.
And did you dress up? I assume you would.
Always.
Always.
And it was so confusing because this year, my daughter was going to go as Galadriel from Lord of the Rings. So I thought, how am I going to match that? Because I always try to do a bit in theme. So I thought I was going to wear elf ears or something. And then all of a sudden she threw me a curveball and dressed up as a little police officer the other day for a dance party she was at. And then I thought, okay. And then all of a sudden last night she came home. She's like, nope, I'm going to be a crossing guard. And I had Adam 1 year dressed up as that. So I had the crossing guards. We were matching. And it was actually a very good costume because it kind of like stopped traffic. It was like, stop. I am in charge.
Oh, that's where the idea came from. I'm in charge.
Yeah.
In charge. Absolutely. Okay. I want to point out we've got a special guest joining us today because I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive into owning a stock and the analysis, the thinking, all the work and the research that goes into that. So, you know, I'm thrilled to bring a specialist within that area. So that stay tuned for that. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. But Melissa, let's just talk a little bit about what we did this week.
Yeah. So I got back from Paris, as we talked about, on Sunday. And I was actually pleasantly surprised that my jet lag was not too bad at all. I had a course on Monday evening, a training course. And I thought, oh, I hope I'm okay to do this evening course. And I was fine. So it was all on learning new techniques for body filler. So normally you've probably heard of dermal filler that we put in people's face. So in the cheeks or the chin or the lips. But now there's a new product that's been indicated for use in obviously much larger volumes on the body. So we trained on a woman doing it on her derriere.
Okay.
Obviously that's a more popular treatment nowadays. People want, you know, a bigger bottom. And so there's a procedure called a BBL, a Brazilian butt lift, which plastic surgeons do, and they take fat from wherever they can get it off a person's body and put it in the buttocks. But for some women, they may not have enough fat or they don't want to undergo that much of a surgical procedure. So instead, we can now use filler. And so it's just much higher volume of a specialized type of filler. And so that's what I was learning on Monday night. So that was kind of fun. And then other than that, I did, you know, I just saw medical patients throughout the week. And then, whoa, we saw each other at a luncheon. Yeah, we had that cause for the pause.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, cause for the pause. So it was a fabulous luncheon hosted by three great women who really recognized the need that let's get more women together. So there's probably about 200 people at the Four Seasons for a beautiful lunch. And I interviewed Dr. Wendy Wolfman, who's obviously world renowned, not obviously, she's world renowned in menopause and perimenopause. And so it was great to be able to spread the word in terms of, you know, how we're feeling, what the symptoms are, and that, you know, there are solutions. And I think that's what's so important and interesting because a lot of people don't know what to do.
Exactly. I mean, there's more and more women entering into the stage of life who want to get more educated, get more savvy. And we've sort of debunked the findings from the Women's Health Initiative years ago that made everybody scared of hormone treatment. And now they're realizing that a lot of women missed out on benefiting from it. And now we're sort of the pendulum is sort of shifting and swinging more towards, okay, there are benefits to hormones. And some women talk to your doctor if you have symptoms, and we don't need to be scared as we were about them years ago. So if we have time later, we'll definitely talk more about perimenopause, menopause, what the symptoms are, how to know if you're in it, what you can do about it, the differences between certain hormones. So we can chat.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to get to that. And I want to learn more about body filler too.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we trained on it on the buttocks, but it's also being used breasts. They call it up a cup. So for women that don't want to get breast implant surgery, this is a daytime procedure that uses filler. And
have you seen the results at all, Melissa?
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't personally laid eyes on it, but the person who did the training said that it's a very natural result and you can't really tell or feel the difference between the filler and the natural tissue. So, and they're also using it, I mean, they're using it for men that want bigger calves. They're using it in the calf muscle. They're using it sort of all over to just body contour. And actually the product is actually called Contour XL. It's actually made by a Canadian company, Prolenium, which I think is
rated. I have heard of this. I heard about it last year from a doctor, a New York doctor that you turned me on to, and she knew about it, that it was coming from Canada. Mm-hmm. But I think is it expensive or you need so many injections? Like there's something
very
about
expensive.
It,
so very- yeah. So, I mean, again, it depends on the practitioner and how experienced they are and how much they're going to charge, but to do, you know, it can cost like, it depends on the area, but to do a, you know, 10 syringes, so 100 cc's each side would be like $15,000. So this is not, this is not a cheap procedure, and you don't want it to be a cheap procedure because this is a dangerous area and you have to be careful and make sure. Yeah. You know, if they, the butt's a very dangerous area because you have large vessels in the area. And if you put product in one of the vessels, or especially with BBLs, this is where you hear of the deaths. If the fat goes into the vessel, it can embolize and you've had some deaths from that. So you have to really make sure you're trained, know what you're doing, use the right product. Yeah. Mm. So now that's for the buttock region, but obviously if you're using it for other regions in smaller amounts, like let's say for, you know, they're using this also, I don't want to get too into it, but for genitals, people are using it, all sorts of different applications that might not require, that might not require as high amounts. And I mean, it seems funny to talk about, but it's big business, you know?
Well,
and
you
it's,
know what we should do, Melissa, too? Like, I'm glad, like, you know, Ari, our podcast is evolving and it will continue to evolve. And, you know, we have a guest on today coming up in about 5 minutes or a couple minutes. But we could also maybe reach out to the CEO or founder of that company.
Totally. I think that would be great. It's a good product. Like, I use most of their products as dermal fillers for the face in smaller amounts. And I like to, the way I like to inject fillers in a very like natural way, not overdoing it. But, you know, there's a lot of people that struggle with self-image or body and want to make little tweaks. And so if there's a consumer that wants it, there's going to be the person that's trained to provide it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And always interesting though, too, to understand the product and the company and how long it took them to develop it. Like that's called R&D, and you see that in biotech and it can take, you know, 10, 20 years. So it's interesting to have that aspect as well, you know, not just, oh, here it is. Here's something new to try. Like, let's understand it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which though, Melissa, let's get to a quick market recap here. Interesting markets for October. They were down. And interestingly, with the S&P 500, so a U.S. market indice, 500 big U.S. companies, it was the first monthly loss since April. So in other words, the market had been up every month since April. So these markets have been charging higher. Now, why are they down? Maybe a little bit of exhaustion. That can always be a reason. But also, as I mentioned to you, we are in quarterly earnings. So when these companies report their earnings, sometimes the numbers disappoint, meaning that they didn't make enough revenue or they didn't make enough profit, or the company management said something negative about the future. And remember, stocks are always looking towards what the future earnings will be. So they price that in and the stock reacts. So as an example, we actually saw Microsoft that was down 6% after they reported their earnings. Their forecast was a little bit slower than Wall Street analysts anticipated. Interestingly as well, Meta, which owns Facebook, that stock was down 4%, even though the results were fine. They did say that they're going to spend significant CapEx next year. And so what does that mean? That means they're going to be spending more money. That means profits might be lower than people had anticipated. So therefore, the stock goes down. But other people might say, well, wait a second. The fact that they're spending on certain areas like AI, 2 years down the road, that's going to make them tons of profit. So where somebody might be selling the stock and putting downward pressure on it, somebody else might say, wait a second, I think this is a huge opportunity. So again, that's where there's always this, you know, push and pull in the market. And that's really what the markets are, which I find so great. You can have different opinions.
Totally. I mean, I don't think, my understanding was that, you know, revenue and usage wasn't down. It's just that spending is going to be, they're going to have to spend so much money to try to increase, on AI.
Correct.
And invest into, more power for the AI.
Yeah. More power for AI. Interestingly, Meta's spending about $38 to $40 billion. That's about 24% of their revenue. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft's spending about $53 billion. So that's 28% of the revenue. So a lot of investors will say, well, wait, that's so much money. That's so much of your profits, so much of your cash flow. Can you really get that back? That would be the bear case.
Right. And they might be saying, oh my God, everybody's racing. And is this just, you know, is it going to go away and is it not going to be fruitful? And now all of a sudden, yeah. But I do think they need to, they obviously, look, there's smart people at those companies who obviously are betting on the need to spend that money.
Absolutely. Seeing it with some of the big tech companies for sure. The other aspect I would just note though, is that today, Friday, we're actually seeing a bit of a reversal in the broader markets. And the reason is because the US jobs numbers were reported and they only had 12,000 jobs created versus 100,000 expected. So that is leading many investors to believe that the US Federal Reserve, which we talk about all the time, will in fact cut interest rates once again, which probably was expected.
But I'm surprised by that because I thought they did that too hastily and inflation wasn't really controlled, so that they shouldn't have even cut the rates as much as they did.
And people will say that. There was a well-known economist, actually used to work with him, Joe Lavornia. He was on CNBC Today. He used to be working, we worked together at Deutsche Bank. And that was his exact comment. I shouldn't say exact. Some people say, no, it's not necessary to continue to cut. And if they do cut, they will cause more inflation.
Yeah.
But the markets always like this ease, right? Remember, if there's lower interest rates, we pay less interest charges. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper for corporations.
Yeah.
So that's just so we understand like this circular referencing going on in markets.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we'll continue to see what kind of further economic data comes out and therefore whether or not they will in fact cut rates. It does appear, just to talk about Canada for a second, that the BOC, just to take a look at the TSX and then we'll bring Ian in. When we take a look at the TSX, that's on track for a weekly drop. We saw 3 weeks of declines as of yesterday. Canadian equities are up by only 0.7% in October. And again, we have such a different composition of the market. So when you just buy the overall TSX, you know, energy could be up, but everything else is down. So it just kind of neutralizes itself or vice versa. So sometimes I think in Canada, in my opinion, is it's better to be a little bit more specific in terms of the sectors or stocks you want to own versus owning the broad market, which I think you can do easier or more easily in the States. I would just say as well, you know, the Canadian dollar did touch its biggest monthly drop in 2 years. That's as our economy slows. We did get GDP here in Canada for August. Remember, we are so delayed in getting our economic data. I do not understand it. This is StatsCan. I don't know what is happening here, but we only grew 0.1% or essentially unchanged from July. So there's a real slowdown here. And the Bank of Canada this week essentially did reaffirm that we will see further rate cuts in Canada to try to stimulate the economy.
I will say that when you talk about the Canadian dollar being so low, like it was shocking when I went to go convert Canadian money to euros when I went to Paris.
Yeah.
I was like, what? That's all I get? Like, it seemed like such a bad trade. Like, why would I do that? Like, if you ask a school-aged child, like, oh, well, I'll give you $1,000 and then you give me only like 650 or whatever it was, 600. Yeah. It seems like a bad deal. And then all of a sudden when you go to Europe, it's like, so it just makes it that much more expensive right now for Canadians to travel abroad.
Right. It does. And I want to explain later in the program, but we're going to bring Ian in. I want to explain why our dollar continues to weaken. I think it's really important because it is backed on policy and of course our economy and the lack of growth. Okay. Let me now bring in my guest. He's going to turn his video off and turn his mute on or off, I should say. Video on, mute off. There he is. Ian Schaefer is joining us. He's the founder and CEO, CIO of Galliant. And he is an institutional investor, having been at hedge funds in the past, McGill graduate, and also MIT graduate. Ian, thanks so much. And this is Dr. Melissa Hirschberg. We haven't met yet.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Thanks for
Thank you for having
us.
Me on.
Yeah, I'm a fellow McGill graduate as well.
That's great. Yes, I fondly remember those days, but I'm getting to the point as I just turned 50 that those memories are fleeting, unfortunately. So
I got to go back and visit.
Yeah, to all those young students out there, enjoy these years, even though you might be griping and talking about job prospects and all that. Those are the best years. So gotta enjoy them while you're in them.
Yeah. Best years are ahead of us.
Yeah, come on. Ian.
That's what they say. We got to keep telling ourselves that, right?
I don't know who they
have
are.
To keep saying it. I keep saying it. I haven't believed it yet, but I'm hoping it's true.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you had some great times on Wall Street.
Yeah, I had a few cardiologist appointments, with with a few physicians. Dr. Melissa, I'm a certified hypochondriac, so had I known you at the time, it would have been nice to have had your contact details. But now, listen, as you see, the markets yesterday down big, today up big. So, it could definitely make the, your heart race. Mm-hmm. So you just have to keep steady, know why you own the stocks that you do, make sure you understand the stories. And as Catherine was mentioning before, when you're in earnings season, make sure your stories are intact. That's the key. And so always making sure and listening to the calls and saying, okay, the reasons why I bought this company, are they still intact? I was, I followed Catherine's advice and she had said, listen to one of our podcasts with your wife. And my wife and I enjoyed, I believe, listening to your inaugural podcast. Dr. Melissa and Catherine, we were on our way to the Bruce Springsteen concert last night in Montreal, and we had a good 20-minute drive ahead of us. So we listened to your podcast. We were so engaged. It was so interesting to hear the way you guys talk about GLP-1 drugs, buying a Tesla, maybe buying the stock. Great podcast, really down to earth, really made it easy for the everyday listener to understand. So your message is on point and I'm glad to be on the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Ian. And one of the things that we really, we want to just get savvy, right? We want to get savvier in health and beauty. And I also think, people need to get savvier with respect to their money that they work so hard for and really how to invest it. And there's so many people who just kind of hand it to somebody. And I think, if we can try to encourage people to, get interested, get invested. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to even just open up a TFSA. You don't need to have a lot of money, but just follow along with us and understand how to even invest. So Ian, that's why I wanted you to come along. Like when I worked on Wall Street, I was on the institutional side. So my clients were hedge funds and big money managers like yourself. That is different from wealth management and retail, which, I'm going to discuss in a different segment. But what you do is, you or an institutional investor, you really have to understand the stocks. I mean, you do in-depth analysis. Maybe just describe what that looks like a little bit when you, and I want us to talk about Uber today. Maybe we just start with Uber. Let's start with Uber.
Okay.
Because you
like it.
Let's
talk about Uber. So, Uber, the everyday company, the company that we all use that's so pervasive in our lifestyle. Actually, the company reported earnings yesterday and the stock was down about 10%. And, someone listening to the call or seeing the headlines might say, why is it down? The stock looked like it did so well. They made so much money. And I think, Catherine, you referenced this in the past, there's always been a focus or a rivalry, it seemed like, in terms of, well, if you believe in Tesla and autonomous vehicles, then you're against Uber. The interesting thing about when I read the Uber call, they talked about 14 different partnerships that they have including with Waymo, including with Cruise, and other different companies, expecting more partnerships to come. So they're trying to, you know, give a message that regardless of where autonomous vehicles are going, and even if Tesla, you know, achieves their goals, they're set to partner with these companies anyway. They're not excluding themselves. They're not trying to build their own robo-taxi, as Tesla was saying. So I think that fear is overblown. I think there was maybe a little bit of issues regarding whether or not their booking guidance was as strong as some people had hoped, maybe after, you know, some good data that was coming out from booking.com and talking about travel and all that. But everything, you know, for as a stock picker, what we want to make sure is, can I, if my mother gave me money tomorrow, can I buy this stock for her? That's as simple as it is. Can I put a check mark? That story was intact. An interesting thing that investors don't know when we talk about multiples, and I know you guys are talking about investment multiples, how do I buy a stock? A stock is referenced on the stock market with the stock price. The stock price doesn't really mean that much. It's all tied to the number of shares they have outstanding, which price multiplied by shares is market cap, okay? When you have a company like—
Let me stop there for one second. Price, the price of the stock times the number of shares outstanding. Outstanding just means how many they've issued, how many are out there floating around that everybody can buy. That equals market capitalization. That just, which why
exactly?
We care about, but why do we care about market cap?
Well, you do because you want to compare it to their earnings. So when people say earnings per share, you need to know how many shares are in circulation to understand what the earnings are. A company may have $100 million in earnings and it may not grow, but if they have 100 million shares outstanding, that 100 over 100 equals $1 of earnings power. So when people say a stock trades at a multiple of, let's say, 20, if you have a dollar of earnings, you would say a 20 times multiple would mean the stock should be $20. In Uber's case, the stock is right now at $73. People look to forward earnings. So for in 2024, we look to say, okay, what will be the earnings power that they have in 2025? Well, we're getting to the end of 2024. So what's interesting, and a tidbit that, you know, Catherine, I'm sure you remember at Deutsche Bank, the analysts on Wall Street who make up this earnings consensus, they're going to be rolling over their numbers to 2025 very shortly, in a few months. So what, in fact, some savvy investors do to get ahead of that is they say, okay, we typically look at a valuation, Uber, $73, but let's look at it on 2026 numbers, which are soon going to be our forward numbers. We look at Uber as earning $4 in non-GAAP earnings per share in 2026. Okay, so I'm not going to, well, it's actually, you're right. I shouldn't get into the semantics about it, but someone looking and say, well, I don't see Uber's earning on Yahoo Finance as $4. Okay. We look at it on an unadjusted basis. Uber reports it unadjusted. So all I'm saying is the real earnings power comparative to every other company is $4. Stock's trading at 73. So you're trading under 20 times earnings. Now, under 20 times may not mean that much, but you look at how fast the company is growing their earnings.
Yeah.
We think they're growing over 30% over the next few years. We do. I mean, they are. If you look at just the earnings multiple, if you look at just their earnings from 24, 25, and 26, you just calculate the rate of growth, you're well over 30% per year.
It's because they're going into more markets or because they're buying more companies and they're, so what do you think is leading?
That's a great point. Because I do liken Uber and Lyft to Booking.com, which is the old Priceline, and Expedia. Because when online travel people had Trivago, they had every different website, no one knew the name, Canoe, all these different companies that were out there. And these two companies basically went on an acquisition spree and bought all of them. So now we're in a two-man race, effectively, which is Booking and Expedia. I think the same is going to be said for this space. And we have DoorDash, who is a competitor of Uber in the Uber Eats segment. And then you have in mobility, you have Lyft. So you're probably, and in the United Kingdom, you have Just Eat, which is also doing. So I think pretty much you're going to have a two-horse race, and Uber is going to be one of them. So, there's many different ways to think about, but just think about how pervasive it is in your life. I look at my credit card statement. I told Catherine the same thing. There is no one company that is listed as frequently or as often on my credit card statement as Uber.
Do you have children?
I do.
Do they order Uber Eats all the time?
every day. And my kid, who already has her own car for some reason, is ordering Ubers.
Uber Eats.
I don't even understand that. Why did I get you the car?
Yeah, and it's like not going to go anywhere. It's crazy.
It's pervasive. It's the verb. I'm going to Uber. You know, it's Kleenex right now. So it's
Google it.
Exactly. Google. Yeah. Perfect example. Yeah. And so, you know, you're in a 2-horse race. You see how strong booking numbers were, even, you know, just a few days ago, their stock was up, I think, $200 on a great earnings report. Uber is just getting started and they are investing. They believe they have a goal to be number one or number two in every country around the world. And if they're not number one or number two, they're pulling out if they don't think they can get there. So they are going into a bunch of new geographies, and that takes, you know, some capital expenditures. You have to spend money to build an infrastructure in these areas. So the spending is high. I think their earnings are capped, even at, like I said, $4 in 2026. So trading under 20 times. And they're I really think they're just getting started. So this is a company that I will say we had about a 4% position. We're buying more today. Just because we think this stock is going to $100, it's 70, it's 73. We just got a pullback and we saw the details as a stock picker. We said the story is intact. So we add. That's what you do. You add when the story is intact and the stock is down.
Talk to me though a little bit about, sorry, go ahead, Melissa. You were going to ask something.
No, I was just saying, I was, you know, nodding in agreement. As we've talked about, I liked Uber as well because similar to what you said, it was just so pervasive in my life.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's now like nomical. It's like a verb. Yeah,
it is. But an interesting point, though, I just want to make you had a great discussion about Tesla, and you were saying that you had put an open market order in and you didn't get filled. And I was just thinking to ourselves of how investors may not realize how we do it here at our office. So if we identify a company, for example, while I'm in here, I had told our group we want to buy Uber. If the stock then gets above a certain level, we will be a purchaser. So typically we want to buy at the end of the day. We know the elections are coming up next week. We know the Federal Reserve is coming up with their decision on interest rates next week. So there could be volatility into the end of the day. So ideally, if we're going to buy Uber today, I'd like to buy it at the end of the day. Hopefully, maybe the stock comes off and trades near its lows. But if it goes the other way, we can't just have a lower target. We have to have a tag on the upper end as well. And so we're saying if it hits, let's say, a 74 level, we don't want to lose it. We want to be a buyer. So I think it's interesting to a tidbit to give your listeners is to say, yes, when you know you want to buy it, yes, it's always great to buy on a downtick on a downward move. Mm-hmm. But if you can't get that downward move and you want to be a buyer, you don't want to lose it just for a few cents. So have an upper level where you say, okay, if it hits the upper, then I'm going to hit it there. If it hits the downward level, I'll buy it there. So you're at least capturing both sides.
Well, it's like when I go and I see a good pair of shoes and I think to myself, oh, they're probably going to go on sale. But just the thought of losing it, I just need to buy them now.
That's it. But at least that's the decline in the stock price. Once if it's on sale, I guess then you know, okay, here's the downtick in the stock and I still like the shoes.
If it's not on sale
and you're hoping it goes on sale, you don't know, but you still want to lose it, you know? So I agree. It's a good analogy.
It's true. I actually went to the Premium Outlet Malls and just west of Toronto, and there was a gorgeous coat, and it was normally so expensive. It was one size too big, but it was so affordable versus what it was that I bought it. I bought it. I could always get it tweaked.
You could wear a sweater, tailor it. Right. Yeah.
Welcome to our program, Ian.
I didn't know I was coming on for the finance segment. I thought I was on for the beauty segment.
Yeah,
there you go.
But
you know what?
No, but I'm happy to join. I love it. Very casual, even discussion. And trying to break down, you know, the noise that we see in the financial markets into, you know, basic English and helping the everyday investor, consumer understand, you know, how to make sense of it.
Right. And I want to bring up the fact, too, that, you know, you're a bottoms up portfolio manager, I believe. Yep. I think you would say that, which we're going to describe. Yep. I'm more top down and then I go bottoms up. It sounds like a beverage of sort. But we should describe what that means, because you're really when I do my investing, I kind of always like to look at where the world is, what sectors might be underpriced, and then I'll either decide to buy the sector or find a stock that I like. What's your approach?
We are bottoms up. Bottoms up just basically means you're looking, you know, at the details of the specific company. Top down, just for the listeners, is more to say, I want to invest in technology. Then within technology, if I get a list of 30 companies in technology, how do I rank them? Who do I want to focus on? So all firms have expertise in certain areas. You know from the fact that I'm a U.S. Investor, and our firm focuses mostly on U.S. Investing. So we're clearly not a commodity. You were talking about the Canadian stock market. You know, that's not our forte. So we focus on the consumer. We focus on technology. We focus on finance, healthcare, retail. And so we've already done our top-down work. We know that those are the sectors within which we want to play. And now there's a little bit of an industrial play on this. You know, we were talking about Vertiv and other companies within AI outside of technology that are getting a technology bump because of this AI story. So those are the areas we want to focus on. And that's what our team, we have a group of six analysts that are working here. They're going through earnings season and they're reading all the transcripts, the calls, they're listening to, they're asking questions after the fact. So we know the companies we own, we know the companies we're interested in. If we make sure that we're on top of the stories by having enough analysts out there listening to the calls, reading the transcripts and fact-checking, we can make sure we say, there's an interesting story emerging here. Let's focus on it. And so once we read the transcripts, we focus on what areas have piqued our interest, what stocks have piqued our interest, that's when we get busy and we say, okay, let's do a write-up and let's call an analyst on Wall Street. You said you worked at Deutsche Bank. I worked, at ABN AMRO on Wall Street. So you might call Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, ABN AMRO, whoever it might be, and ask a question. We typically like to ask a bear, someone who doesn't like the company, why he doesn't like the company, he, she doesn't like the company, and a bull, why they like the company. So we want to see both sides. Mm-hmm. And we take that feedback and then come up with our opinion. So by knowing the bear and the bull case, you're not just getting one side of the story and you're not really leaving anything to chance. And then we meet as a group and we discuss and we debate, we come up with our earnings projection and we say, okay, this is what we think is fair value. So it may be this company's great, but it's not at the price we want. So for example, Uber, if we had assigned a $50 fair value and the stock is 73, we wouldn't buy, but it would be put on our watch list.
Right.
It's very important to have a watch list. Doesn't mean you have to buy everything you like today. It's a very important point for your listeners to understand that the best company in the world, Apple, Tesla, whatever it might be, at a certain price, it's not a good buy. And the worst company in the world, at a certain price, if it gets really, really low, could be a buy. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? It's not just about buying a company and holding it forever. What we do is when our companies get ahead of themselves, we like the company, we don't want to sell them outright, we sell a little bit, we trim. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It gets extended. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's certain reasons to own every company, and there's certain for example, if you want to buy Tesla and Elon Musk is the reason why you're buying Tesla, if he ever exits the company and goes to focus on his space ambitions, you have to say to yourself, my reason for buying it is gone. I have to sell it, or at least I have to trim it. It's very important to not change your thesis just because the stock is working. So know why you're buying it and know what will need to happen for you to sell it. And portfolio discipline, especially at our firm, when a company gets too big, Amazon has done this many times. Gets above 10% of our portfolio. Okay, it's now 11%. We're going to bring it to 9. Sell 2%, but keep the story as long as its thesis is on track. So that's very important as well.
Two points, and then I'll let you go. So keeping you longer, and I know you've got a trade on.
Pleasure.
But you've got people watching that, so I'm not worried.
But they're taken care of. They don't need me. I'm big picture.
Okay, good. I just want to follow up. What was the news the other week with respect to Uber and the potential for moving more into travel?
Okay, so this is interesting. So we were talking about Booking before, Booking, which is the old Priceline, renamed Booking. Expedia is the number two. There was a rumor that was circulating that Uber could combine or make an offer to purchase Expedia. And Expedia was a name that we're very interested in. I'm an Expedia user, and I have to say, Dr. Melissa, if you like products and going on, the loyalty program at Expedia is unbelievable. I think I believe I'm a platinum member of Expedia, and I've unlocked discounts on travel, hotels, whatever it might be, and they pay you for just fulfilling the travel quest. So if you're booking a hotel through them, just by staying at that hotel and completing that transaction, you'll get like $5, $10, $15 back. So yeah, over time,
I use it. It's amazing. Both, and I use booking.com and Expedia.
Okay.
I find it's easier to cancel on Booking.
Okay.
That's my only.
Yeah, there's
one thing.
Live chat. You're right. They do make it a little bit more difficult.
Because when I'm going on a trip, sometimes I'll book multiple hotels. Yeah. And then I make a decision later. So I have to make sure it's because I've gotten burned before.
Yeah.
Where I forgot.
So the idea though, but your point is great. As a user, I love Expedia. As a stock, it's been, it's been number two to Booking. But the interesting thing was people had it in their minds that Uber was going to become more of a full service travel brand, and it's going to buy Expedia. They didn't come out completely and say they are not buying Expedia, but on this call yesterday, they did say, we really have a high bar for doing any mergers and acquisitions. So we really look to do organic growth first. Mm-hmm. And if we cannot, fulfill this need organically or partnering with someone, then we will look for an acquisition, but it has to be set at a really high bar. It has to be additive to the earnings. And so they basically tried to say it's not on the table for right now, although nothing's for certain.
Don't you see M&A with like an electric vehicle? Like if they're going to compete with the potential robo-taxi, like I could see them buying Prius or something. Like, do you know what I mean? Some like electric vehicle so that they could have like the cheaper version of Uber that where you don't have a driver involved, but then the more expensive, like, they have Uber Black, the Uber X, and then the most cheap Uber would be the robo Uber that doesn't have a driver. So...
I guess the idea is if they're partnering with the Waymos and Cruise and 12 other, companies out there, their idea is to say, we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into one partnership. Because otherwise, maybe the other guy is saying, oh, you're already in bed with this company. We don't want to. So I think they want to be even with Tesla. They'd rather be a partner with Tesla. So,
well, it's funny.
Yeah.
Right. I see that. So it was funny because I was telling Catherine, I use the self-drive feature on my Tesla this week for the first time ever. And I was scared to do it. Like I actually had to like brace myself. And it's definitely, it's amazing. Like, but it's so cool. And it's unbelievable that it can do this, like it's just felt like you're in a video game, but it's not there. Like you can't trust it. It's not there at all. And it almost feels like when it is there, it's like you're driving, if you have this self-driving car, it feels like you're driving behind one of those learning cars. You know how like when you drive past someone that's learning, they're going so slow, they're stopping for 2 minutes at the stop sign, they're not moving into the intersection.
Exactly. Like,
yeah. So anyhow.
Okay, but I wonder though, Ian, do you not think that, like, think about it. If you're Uber and you're making all these partnerships, you now have partnership risk. That can cap, in my opinion, the valuation. That's number one. If you're going to make an acquisition, in some ways to do travel makes sense because, first it was just Uber driving. Then they put Eats in there like, oh, okay, I'll try that. Then you put travel on. It might make sense. It's all there, all connected. You can then, have your you get off the plane or whatever, and then it somehow is connected algorithmic wise, knowing that you might need an Uber, and that pops up. So I think that could be an interesting acquisition. And or why wouldn't you try to make some type of acquisition with respect to a self-driving company? I don't know what the
because
price would be.
I think the market is thinking, like I said, that they're going to build their own, which they clearly are not, or they're going to basically make an alliance with one. They're saying we're open to business with anything. So A, there's a savings. A dollar savings by them saying they're not going out to build. It's a win-win when you have a partnership. I don't see it as capping their upside. I think it's smart. I think the market is yet to fully appreciate the fact that they're not in competition with Uber. So when we talk about the robotaxi event, and I think Dr. Melissa, you had said that, Elon keeps extending that date.
Yeah,
so I think the fact that,
happening?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're far away. Waymo is definitely ahead. So let's say, in fact, they did a deal with Tesla. Let's say they did one deal. We're in an exclusive deal with Tesla. If Tesla doesn't win the race and Waymo does or Cruise does, then what happens? Then there's your risk. You're partnered with everyone. Okay, assuming one guy gets there first, you're probably partnered with them. So you're probably sooner to bring autonomous vehicles on. And I think less risk that way. I think they're just trying to focus on what they do well. Building an autonomous vehicle is not what they do well.
Fair.
And on the acquisition front, I do see Uber, I do see the benefits of an Uber buying someone like an Expedia. I just think they're trying to say, how much are we going to have to spend? Is it going to be, when you back out how much we're going to spend, is it going to be additive to earnings? Meaning, are we still going to hit the $4 that we said we're going to, you know, that the estimates are for 2026? I think a better idea is, wouldn't it be better if Airbnb bought Expedia? No one's talking about that. That makes more sense, right? Because why you're pigeonholing yourself into saying, okay, I want to, I'm going to look for a rental. Why don't you look for a 100% rental vis-a-vis a hotel?
100%. Because if I'm going to go, I'm either looking at Airbnb or I'm looking at a hotel, and then I'm comparing the two and debating which one to use.
But no, we could do, guys. You know, we could do. We could keep on coming up with these rumors, and then we'll know when the podcast is really getting traction. When we give a rumor like this, and we see the stocks running.
How old are you? Come on, isn't that what those young people did on?
Well, on Wall Street Bets, right?
Yeah.
That's meanwhile, the company Reddit went public. Yeah. I think it was around $40 a share. Stocks went to 120. Okay. The stock is doing amazing. I mean, you know,
Reddit's amazing. People really trust it and go on it. And I read stuff on Reddit all the time.
I do a little bit too, but I'm a little bit bitter because I talked about it here at the office and I said, I think there's something here. We didn't buy it. We were looking in it. And sometimes it feels like there's like a microphone or a camera in the office. And as soon as we're looking to buy something, something happens, the stock runs away and you end up feeling you'll have to chase it, which we won't do. We have financial discipline, but... Yeah. So that's your Tesla story right there.
You better get that checked.
Well, we have this podcast room. I just hope it's not feeding into Wall Street somewhere, right?
No, you have your finger. I always say you have your finger on the pulse. You know.
Yeah.
But if Expedia is going up on this Airbnb rumor, then we'll know for sure.
There you go. Okay. Real quick here. Two things. The CEO of Expedia used to be at Uber.
Yeah. Yeah, there is there's a connection. I think that's why it was a plausible theory that the two of them would be connected. But listen, you can never say never. And I think it's more likely if Expedia was trading lower, if let's say earnings coming out next week, if the earnings are bad, the stock trades, you know, to 120, 130, then maybe you can come out with an offer. I just don't see why Uber would have been so... They didn't say the word Expedia, but they did comment about such a high bar from M&A, and I read it and they repeated it a few times. It just seemed like they went out of the way to dissuade people from feeling that that's going to happen anytime soon. That's just my gut.
Uber Eats and DoorDash seem to be the biggest players. Yeah. I almost wonder about buying all those Skip the Dishes and all the other ones, getting rid of them and leaving it to like DoorDash.
Well, they're being bought up effectively, right? Yeah. Postmates was bought by Uber and that's folded. Yeah.
I see.
Uber Eats, Just Eat is buying a lot of them as well. So they all, like I said, I think it's going to be a two-horse race down the road. Well, two-horse in the sense that it's Uber who's in both. And then you have, Lyft, who's just in mobility. And you have DoorDash that's in Eats. Maybe the two of them merge. DoorDash, Lyft would make sense.
They can talk about the synergies.
Yeah. That's why it's exciting. Cardiologists are a necessity.
List.
Yeah.
Just so you know, that one's on my watch list.
Okay. DoorDash, it was DoorDash versus Uber on our side. We thought that Uber, you know, by accessing both sides of the opportunity, we thought we had a better play there, but both stocks have done well. So.
Okay. Lastly, and then we're going to let you go. And this is a teaser for next time. Melissa's been asking me a lot for AI stocks. Obviously, NVIDIA is one of them. Tesla, I think, is another one. But I asked you specifically for Dr. Melissa when you and I spoke for my other program, The Buck Stops Here. And tell us the name and just briefly what it is, and then we'll come back another time and do a deep dive.
Well, I think you're talking about like the Vertiv So listen, it's not an everyday name. I think people who are technology investors have definitely heard of it because the stock has done really well. But it's an industrial play, and what they do is provide temperature control, liquid cooling. I sent you some information about that. That's their new product. So they really are trying to keep the temperatures down in these data centers that are powering the technology companies, their servers, and AI. So the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Googles, all the big names that we know, obviously they'll be players in AI. And Vertiv is an under the radar, if you will, in terms of the general public. and understanding how it could also be a play. But that's just one of many. We don't have the biggest position
down in those cryptocurrency mining facilities too.
Sorry?
Can they keep the temperature down on the cryptocurrency?
They're all data centers. All data centers. Oh, wow. They're saying AI.
They're going to be investing.
AI data centers are 75% of their business. But we'll talk more about it on the next segment.
Okay.
And we'll go over it in detail.
Thank you so much. That
great
was
to be on. You guys are doing fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll have you back soon. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks.
So, Melissa, was that interesting for you to hear how a real money manager thinks about the stocks?
Absolutely. And I think what we talk about here is, I mean, I'm someone who's not in finance. I'm a doctor. But in terms of just over the past 10 years, reading about it, talking about it, the fact that you can even have a conversation and understand and like you talk about, like get in the game of understanding these things. And the same way he thinks about it, we as women or whoever's as consumers, we can like a story too. You don't have to be a professional portfolio manager to understand that. You can be around companies and things every day that you like and you like the story of. And you can put your money behind it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true. The one reason why I did, yes. And I do think it's important, though, to recognize, as he said, it could be the best company, but if it's worth $50 and it's trading at 80, you don't want to buy. You want to wait. So that's where, we'll learn a little bit more as we go through, what valuations are and if they're meaningful. For some sectors, they are. For some sectors, they aren't. Like, what we didn't get into is Ian was a big owner of Amazon going back like 15 years ago when they didn't make nearly as much as they do today, weren't as big as they were. The valuations were sky high. And I'd have him on air and I'm like, how can you pay for this? It gets so expensive on a valuation perspective. But he saw a big picture where Amazon was going.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's worth it.
Well, and as we compare it to shopping, a Chanel purse, 5-10 years ago, people are like, oh my God, it's, $5,000. You're crazy, or $3,500. You're crazy to spend that for a purse. And today it's $10,000. So things are always going to seem expensive. That doesn't mean there's still no higher to go.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move it on here talk a little bit more about menopause.
Yeah. Which I feel like should have been named menostop, because it's not paused. It doesn't start again.
Menostop.
Your menstrual cycles are done.
Oh.
They're done. Like they say menopause, but like pause implies that something's restarting. You're done.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
I didn't even know is the meno part, is the meno even supposed to be?
Yeah. So meno is the, though that signifies menstruation. Meno means to bleed. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's menostop.
Menostop. Meno done.
Who named it? Who named this?
Yeah. But anyhow, the talk was great. And it was interesting that we got, what I really liked is that
you talking about the event that we did this week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just.
Cause for the pause luncheon. Yes.
Yeah. The cause for the pause. And there was an opportunity. And like you said, there was about 200 people there and you could write down your questions live during the thing. And there were so many questions for them to choose from, which goes to show that people are curious. People have questions. It's not an easy recipe. Oh, you're in menopause. You do this and done. Mm-hmm. Symptoms can vary. Treatment plans can vary. And so, yeah, I thought we could use this as an opportunity that if you had any questions or review or some of the things you think women might want to know, then I can help debrief.
So I guess, I think it's important to understand, and I think this came out, what the difference is between bioidentical and body similar.
Yeah, so that's in terms of, so when we hear about hormones, we often hear this word, it's bioidentical hormones, bioidentical. And I think that people use that to imply safety, to say, oh, this isn't hormone therapy that they used to use back when they did the Women's Health Initiative, that were not the natural hormones that our own body makes. That's what they, that was from a different type of hormone. Now, bioidentical and body similar are actually the same, but a lot of people think of bioidentical as compounded formulations. So a lot of the time when people are getting bioidentical hormones, what they're doing is they're going to a compounding pharmacy. They're given a prescription, and that compounding pharmacy is custom formulating a cream or a gel with varying amounts of estrogen, the natural kind of estrogen that our body uses. Whereas if you get menopausal hormone therapy prescribed by your doctor, you can go to the pharmacy and get not a custom pharmacy, not compounded, but just like the name brand patch or pill. They're both identical to what our body naturally makes, but one is compounded versus the other is FDA or Health Canada approved.
Right. So I think the big takeaway for me is the compounded ones are not Health Canada approved.
Correct. So let me give you an example of why so many people, and we didn't touch on this at the event, but a big reason so many people got bioidentical hormones is because a lot of doctors...
You mean the compounded ones?
Yeah, the compounded bioidentical, what we think of when we think of bioidenticals, the different gels and creams that people are rubbing on in different amounts. So I think the reason is a lot of doctors were scared to prescribe and they didn't want to do it because of this Women's Health Initiative. And they're always thinking, do no harm. And I don't know if I want to prescribe a hormone. And they felt maybe that they didn't have the training or education or they just weren't interested. And so what was happening is a lot of people were then going to a naturopath. So they might have benefits that cover the price of a naturopath. So they would go to the naturopath and a naturopath is not able to prescribe the Health Canada approved one from the pharmacy. The naturopath instead can do these custom formulated ones and they often work together with a compounding pharmacy. So a lot of people will be given this recommendation from a naturopath rather than from their family doctor or from their OB-GYN. So that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. So now that you're getting more doctors prescribing, the doctors are just going to prescribe what you can go and get covered at your pharmacy. So for example, let's say I decide to go on the Estradot patch. Okay. I have, it's called one of the brands of estrogen patch is called Estradot. It's just one of the names of one. Okay. So let's say I decide that I'm going to go on that patch. I have drug coverage. Like I have through, you know, so I can go to the pharmacy and I will get that prescription and I will pay nothing. And let's say I decide to get Prometrium. That's the progesterone that you get both. It's the bioidentical progesterone that you can get Health Canada, that you can get from the pharmacy or a compounding pharmacy. But if I go and I get the prescription from the regular Shoppers Drug Mart or whatever, if you have drug coverage, that will be, you won't pay anything. Whereas if you get it from this custom compounding pharmacy, you often will have to pay.
Interesting.
Right. So it's just a little bit of a way to think about it or understand it. So a lot of people are like, okay, the easiest way to know if you're approaching menopause is if your periods start getting wonky. Okay.
Yeah.
Irregular. So let's say you used
what
to
about
be on
sleep? If you're having problems sleeping and even if you're like 40.
Well, yes. However, you could have problems sleeping for a number of different reasons. Okay. You might just be having sleep apnea or maybe you're stressed or anxious. But if your periods, if you're around the age of menopause or perimenopause, so let's say you're in your 40s or 50, early 50s, and you start noticing that you're skipping a period, or that instead of your cycle being 28 days, now sometimes they're every 14 days, or sometimes you'll go 6 months. Now your periods are going, that signals that you're approaching menopause. Mm-hmm. And what that also tells us is that if your periods are wonky and all over the place, so are your hormones.
Okay.
And this is when people start to experience symptoms, is from fluctuating hormones. Sometimes they're too high, sometimes they're low, and sometimes they're going up and down. And the symptoms of that can often be irritability, insomnia, mm-hmm. hot flashes, distractibility or brain fog. You're just up and down. Mm-hmm. And we know this as women because we go through it in a mini version throughout our lives, you know, when you go through puberty. I don't know if you remember, but your mother probably does, that you were probably a basket case. I mean, when mm-hmm. girls go through puberty, they are emotional, irritable, their right. periods aren't yes. totally regular because they're going through that fluctuating hormone period.
Right.
And then with pregnancy, again, you go through trouble sleeping and sweats and all these different brain fog because, again, your hormones are changing. Mm-hmm. Postpartum is another period where all of a sudden then we have to deal again with crashing hormones and changing mm-hmm. hormones. Then we get it with perimenopause. So we go through this mm-hmm. until finally you're in menopause, mm-hmm. which is now the definition of menopause is 1 year since your last period. So then you're officially considered menopausal.
Right.
So the difference between menopause and this leading up to its stage is now that you haven't had a period in a year, it means that almost certainly we know that your estrogen levels are low.
Low.
So as they talked about, you know, there's a lot of people capitalizing on charging women for expensive hormone tests. And like the OB-GYNs were saying, we know that if you're in your 50s, you haven't had a period for a year, or a test your estrogen, it's going to be low.
Yeah. Like you don't need to get your blood work done because it's going to be low.
Right. It's going to be, we know this. Now, that being said, I mean, take charge of your health. And that doesn't mean you can't still get it done. You can. Sometimes you need to see that number, you know, okay. Like my when your pants are tight, you know, you've gained weight, but sometimes you don't believe it till you see the number on the scale.
Right.
Okay. So if you want to go and get a hormone panel, that's totally your prerogative.
Right.
So we know that estrogen is going to be low in menopause. And then the question is, if you transitioned into menopause, okay, and now you're at the steady state of low estrogen, is there still benefit to being on hormones? And a lot of women struggle with this decision, as we've talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. But mm-hmm. I think what's difficult too sometimes is even if you kind of don't have a lot of symptoms, what to me is so interesting is that the low amount of hormones in your body affects your entire body. So even if you might not see it or feel it as much, there is apparently evidence that it affects your vascular, your cardiovascular, mm-hmm. your joints, obviously, mm-hmm. et cetera. So to me, you know, after this event, I came home and I said to my husband, I said, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to get on estrogen. And he goes, why? And I just thought there, I'm like, I forget.
But that's just it.
And now I'm remembering. I'm like, because I don't know what it's doing to my heart and my cardiovascular. And so I do want to do it. And so my question to you, though, Melissa, and let's talk about the Health Canada approved ones that people have sure. these names at the tip of their tongue in terms of what the options are. I mean, we don't have to list everything, but give us a couple names.
Okay. So when you're thinking of estrogen, a decision is going to be what route you want to take the estrogen. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to put it on as a gel, so estrogel would be one of them.
Okay.
Whether you want to wear a patch, and the patches are really small. So it's not like this big arm patch you have to walk around with, just so you understand. The patches are small, and a lot of people use them, place them low down on their pelvis, like under where their underwear, so you wouldn't even see them. Mm-hmm. And so the patch, I mean, one name I said was Estradot. I think Climera is another name. There's just different name, but what you have to know is, you have to first choose the route. So the gel, the patch, or orally. So mm-hmm. Estrace, I think, is the name of the oral version. So the first thing you're going to choose is the route of administration that you like. The next thing you're going to have to figure out is the dose. And this is something you'll talk to your doctor about. So it depends on how severe your symptoms are. So for example, if you're really struggling with intense hot flashes, night sweats, you might not start on the very lowest dose. You might start on a low dose still, see how you do, and then increase it from there. Whereas let's say you're in menopause, you're not really having the hot flashes and the night sweats, but you're thinking you might benefit from putting a little bit of estrogen protectively back in your system. You might mm-hmm. then go with the very low dose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are the decisions. Which route you're going to take it, what dose you're going to take it, and so that's when it comes to
okay.
estrogen. Then you're going to, a later discussion is for how long. So people used to think, well, if I get on this, do I have to be on it forever? And no, you can go off. A lot of women take it for 5 to 10 years, then go off it. Some women who feel good think, I don't want to go off it. Like I have some patients, I have a patient in her 80s who's on hormones still.
Wow, 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's the next decision. Okay, then when it comes to progesterone.
This is it.
Okay, so if you still have a uterus, meaning, if you have not had a hysterectomy, okay, you cannot take estrogen without also taking progesterone. The reason is if you take estrogen unopposed without progesterone, the lining of your uterus could build up and it could be a risk for endometrial cancer. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take the progesterone to offset that. If you've had a hysterectomy, then you're fine. You can just take estrogen. So now you have to choose how you want to take the progesterone. So you can get a progesterone releasing IUD. So you might have heard of that before, like Mirena or Kylena. Those are name brands of IUDs that people have in place. They stay for 5 years. Or you could take an oral progesterone. Most people use one called Prometrium. It's a capsule you take in the evening. Some people find that it can make them a little bit sleepy. Some people love that because they find it helps with sleep. Yeah. Other people are like, oh, I feel dopey on it. And so it's something just depends on how your body reacts to it. So that is if you're going to take estrogen and progesterone. And now, and just to add another thing to the mix is there are also two things on the market that sort of combine everything. So there's a drug called Duaviv you can talk to your doctor about, which is a combination of estrogen and something called a SERM, which protects you from that, which protects the endometrial lining from the estrogen. So you don't have to take a progesterone with that. And that's just one pill a day. So it's easy breezy, a nice option for people. Mm-hmm. And because it doesn't have the progesterone, the risk of breast cancer is a little bit lower. And there's another drug called Tivolone. It's much more popular in Europe than here. And it's a pill that works to naturally increase estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone.
Ooh.
Because when we go through menopause, in addition to losing estrogen and progesterone, we also have a decreased levels of testosterone. And some women notice that as loss of libido or intensity of orgasm.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah. So these, so get educated, understand your options, and don't be afraid to ask your doctor about the options. And as we talked about, there are specialists that specialize, particularly in menopause. Sometimes it just takes a while with our system to get in. So maybe start with your family doctor. And it's a bit of trial and error, the same way back when you were in your 20s and you were trying out birth control pills. Sometimes you tried a few different brands before you settled on, this is my regimen, you know?
Right. So so that's a great analysis. I think that's very clear, gives us a lot to use. I want to say, though, Melissa, that, you know, when you say talk to your doctor, this is a big pet peeve of mine, and it's really just been coming to light, you know, because we're all getting educated in this right now, which is there's so many general practitioners and doctors who don't know about this area of healthcare. And I mean, you can speak to it, but the reason is because there's no billing code. So in other words, there's no real incentive for doctors to understand this area because they don't, it is a specialized area, by the way, in my opinion, and I think most women's opinions, and yet you don't get paid for it. And this conversation should be an hour long, but they'll only pay for like 15 minute increments.
So that's the issue, right? So it is a long conversation. This isn't a quick 10 minute conversation. And I think that's why a lot of people have gone towards the naturopath because, hey, I can sit down and talk to somebody for an hour. But then you're a little limited in terms of the treatment options you're going to have.
Because they can't actually prescribe.
They can just give you the custom compounded. Yeah. So I think that there are some naturopaths that work together with doctors that can be a good option. And I do think there's going to be more education for family doctors. It's a hard, and I would say this as a family doctor, because you're expected to know everything. Because you're the first stop for all these things, yet they're a specialist. So you have to know. I think that now that this conversation is becoming so much more common and popular, I think that they'll be given, I think doctors will be given clinical practice guidelines and an algorithm of how to start, because we have that for other things in medicine, like diabetes and osteoporosis. I mean, we're always given that, and we just need one for menopause. We need a good clinical practice guideline.
Yeah. And menopause. To be paid. And you need to be paid.
And we need to get paid. I think, and also, I mean, we will be billed. I think the way it should work is you bill it as a counseling code. So it's a counseling, which you can
Why not build it as a menopause or menopause?
Yeah, and a menopause health assessment, 100%.
Menopause health assessment needs to be done. By the way, Manitoba has...
My home province.
Your home province has actually implemented a billing code for this.
That's great. It should be. It would encourage more people to do it. You know, I remember, I'm trying to think how many years ago this was, probably 10, 15 years ago. They put a code, if you're going to cancel someone on smoking cessation, there's a code for that.
What?
Yeah. You get to chart bill extra. If you're going to counsel somebody on STDs, and there's a code for that. So, because they want to encourage people to have these talks.
So, and we don't have a menopause code, and it's half the population. It's absolutely.
You know what's even more crazy? You know what the code is in family practice to do a pap smear? You know how much you get to charge for a pap smear?
How much?
What do you think you should have to charge for it? What do you think should be the price of a pap smear?
I have no idea, but it's probably because it's woman. I hate to say it. It's $20.
Yeah, it's about that. It's about $18.
Yeah. And think about how important that is.
Yeah, it's really important. And it takes time, you know, to do it and set up and get the, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyhow, we need to have some changes to the fee code. And I think we'll definitely get there because... Oh. Yeah.
Well, now we will because we're really raising this as a huge topic. Mm-hmm.
When women want something, they get it.
Yeah, when women. I don't know if everybody heard that clearly because I started to laugh. Say that again.
When women want something, we get it. Eventually.
There you go. No, sooner than later. Sooner than later. Yeah. Okay, I know you have a heart out at 3:15 to go to skating and hockey.
Correct.
Okay, but I want to go back to one thing, Melissa. When you said the comment about. You got 650 euros or whatever for $1,000 Canadian. You know, people have to understand that, you know, money goes to where money is treated best. Just like you go to your friends who treat you best. You forget the friends who are horrific to you or not nice to you or whatever it is. And so when central banks, now the Bank of Canada lowered rates, and they'll probably lower it again, that means that our interest rate is lower. So if you were a foreign investor out of Europe and you say, oh, I want to buy some different currencies, and the US is paying a higher rate overnight versus, or in the bank account, to make it simple, versus what's being paid in Canada, where are you going?
Yeah, the US.
You're going to the US. So therefore, there's less people buying the Canadian dollar. That's one reason why it goes down. It's less attractive at a lower rate. So even though you might feel good that, you know, your interest payments are lower, you have to understand as well that when you want to buy anything that's imported, you're doing it with less purchasing power, with a lower dollar value. And then you have to sit back and say, well, why did all of this happen? Why are we in this position? And then you have to look at the policies that have been implemented, in my opinion, over the past 8.5 years.
Yeah.
Because our economy, we were at par to the US dollar 11 years ago.
We were?
We absolutely were. We actually above par.
Yeah.
So you had a lot more buying power when you traveled to the States and or Europe. But it shows you, in a good way, it shows you how quickly things can change.
Mm-hmm.
You implement different policies. So, mm-hmm. But it's just important to understand, like, you know, you go where you're treated best. Money goes where it gets paid the most. Just if you only want to buy a stock that's going to do well for you. So I just wanted to point that out. And then also, Melissa, I can't remember if you said you bought Air Canada or wanted to. Because they just, didn't you say that?
No.
No? Oh, no. Okay. The stock was up 9%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They did. What do you think? Why do you think that?
They beat earnings. They're seeing good international demand.
So people are traveling?
Yes.
So despite our weak dollar, people are still... Jetting around,
I guess. Well, it's not a lot of choice either, is there?
That's very true.
Okay. Yeah. Lastly, Melissa, what to watch for next week? I want to just point out that it's obviously the U.S. election. You know, some people might say on Tuesday, some people might say, well, why do I care? Both candidates, Harris and Trump, have both said that they're going to be more protectionist with the U.S. economy. So what does that mean? It means the potential for tariffs, whether it's from China, Mexico, or with respect to Canada. We went through this back, you know, a couple of years ago. And I just want to point out, it's so interesting. You know, there's about $320 million that crosses the Ambassador Bridge. That's between Detroit and Windsor every day. And it's so busy. So this, you know, we export 80% of our goods to the United States. Our trade with the United States is so vital to the Canadian economy. And it's so busy, this bridge, that they're building another one down the road, 2 miles down the river.
Wow.
We're paying for it. And we're paying to the tune of $4.5 billion. So it tells you how important trade is with the United States, that we're going to spend $4.5 billion to make another bridge. So that's why, you know, we're paying for this, right? And by the way, trade is up by about 46% or so. So, you know, it is really important to us, our relationship with the United States. And, you know, stay tuned, right, with respect to who wins You know, we deal with it either way. And it's good either way. And hopefully
I know we're not a political podcast, but if you had to bet, what do you think would win?
I've been following it so closely in the, you know, these betting, you know, platform. I'm not going to say. Do you want to say who you think?
I think Trump's going to win.
Okay.
I don't know. Obviously I have no idea.
Yeah.
But the fact that no one's saying is like, are people voting for him?
I know.
You know, like, I mean, we're Canadian. We obviously don't vote in the US and I don't know, but it just seems like no one's saying anything. And it's like, I feel like, I don't know.
Well, I think people are saying, oh, it's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. And, you know, maybe we'll know by Thursday. And I think last time we knew on a Saturday. So just, you know, buckle up, right? We'll see what the markets do.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be interesting. Anyway.
Right now, I should say, you know, how I've always said, and then we'll go, markets are forward-looking pricing mechanisms. They're trying to price in what's going to happen. The markets, I think many people would tell you, is that Trump's probably going to win.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, I think it looks like it's priced in a Trump win or thinking about a Trump win.
Yeah.
But who knows?
We'll see. It's coming up. Okay, I'm going to let you go. You got 2 minutes to get to your car.
I do.
Are you going to drive it?
I'm going to use the self-driving all the way.
Sounds like it's going to be a very slow ride.
It's slow, but it's a good thing that it's slow because I'm probably going too fast. You know, it's a good driver when it does the right thing. But sometimes it says, it will tell you, like, you're supposed to still have your hands on the wheel as like to be, it wants you to be very cautious. It's very clear that it's a beta trial and you need to take it seriously. And so it gives you warnings. They're like, Tesla detected that your hands are not on the warning. You only get 2 more strikeouts and you lose your self-driving.
Oh my God. That's so strict.
It's strict, but as it should be, because this is life and death. It's safety. I mean, it's,
By the way, accidents are up about 40 to 50%. That's a US number, probably because of texting and everything. So when Elon Musk, I think, says and believes that this is going to be a much safer approach, to your point, and being safety and focused, there's a good reason. There's too many accidents.
Interesting.
Yeah. I hope the people who need it use it.
Well, exactly.
The worst drivers need it.
Exactly.
I have a husband who might need it. At least I think he does.
I need a one that parks for me. I'm telling you, sometimes I'm the best parallel parker. I just feel my way in. I don't know. I seem to be very good at that, but it's when I have to park in between two poles. It's not good.
Poles?
Like an underground parking lot is not my friend. No. All right. Okay.
All right. Bye. Episode 5 done and in the books. We'll see you next time.